IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We are always so glad to be with you, wherever you are. We wish we could see you. It would be so nice.
Wouldn't that be great?
At the other end.
When are we going to have visual podcasts? Wait, how could we see everyone, though?
Yeah, that's true.
They could see us, but I'm not sure we would
want that. No, not with the way we'd
like
this morning.
Them to not see us, and we'd like to see them.
Yeah, it would be
maybe
great.
In this huge little mosaic of little tiles, and if someone looked interesting or was smiling or making a face, we could just click on them and they'd get big.
Yeah, we could do that on Zoom, but you know, that doesn't work so good. on our podcast. But welcome. We're so happy to have you. We're progressing through summer at this moment where we are. Wow, there's so many things happening. We just deposited our fourth missionary, well, not personally, the parents actually did it, into the MTC, that were the mission field.
And the Missionary Training Center.
Missionary Training Center in Mexico City yesterday. They took off. This is a family of six. They all slept at our little condo overnight.
Because we're close to the airport.
They had
quite a little party here just to send them off.
At 6 a.m., there they were at the airport sending them off. But this is exciting times. We've just really got an amazing era. And many of you may have too. And many of you have already been past the era. And some of you got it coming. And some may not have missionaries. And we understand that, too. But it is really a fun time.
You know, Linda, we always try on the podcast to talk about what's really on our minds at the moment, right? So before we get to our topic of the day, which I think is really actually a very important one, let's be candid and say it's kind of interesting to grow a little older. We wake up in the morning now and we ask ourselves, what hurts today? Or what's wrong today? Or how do I feel today? And what we're trying to do is to say, well, 99% of me feels really good. It's just the toe that's got gout that's bothering me today. Or it's just, you know, my knee's a little shaky today or whatever. Or gosh, you know, I've got a headache or whatever it is. But isn't life interesting?
It is interesting. Every day there's something.
We had a friend who used to, he's a little older than us, he's maybe 5 years older, and he would always say, you know, isn't it great to grow old? It's just so wonderful. In all of eternity, we're only going to grow old once. We get born several times. We get born when we're born. We get born when we're baptized. We might get born again. We might get born into an eternity when we die. But we only get old once. It's such a privilege. It's such a learning experience. And I look back on when he used to say that, and he was enough older than us. I think he was just trying to convince himself.
Well, he had Parkinson's. You remember that?
Yeah, he
Larry
did.
Stevens.
Yeah, well.
He was bent over a walker. And I said, Larry, how are you doing today? And he said, you know, Linda, we only have one chance in this whole life.
In all of eternity to grow old.
And
it's so interesting.
It is just so interesting. So anyway,
that's a good attitude.
It is. We're going to have to adopt that. Yes.
Yeah, that is really true. Now you try to take care of yourself. You try to get checked up. You try to go to the doctor and make sure you're okay and not have something surprise you and so on. But there is a sort of a planned obsolescence in our bodies. Let's face it. We can delay it. We can sort of try to level it off. I was telling a guy the other day, I've always been an athlete and I've always had goals, right? And it used to always be get to the next level, progress further, beat the guy that I couldn't beat before in tennis or whatever. And now, let's be honest, the goals are just maintenance. They're just, can I just level off? Can I not decline too fast? Can I slow down the rate of decline? And you can say, well, that's kind of depressing. And I guess it is.
But, you know, it's life and we all have to deal with things. Our kids are dealing with things every day. That's what life is all about, is dealing what comes up next. And the surprise is you just never know what it's going to be.
You never know. Well, okay. Having been candid and told you what's kind of on our mind as we woke up this morning, let's get to the subject, which, as many of you know, all of you know who listen regularly, we're in the midst of writing this all summer long, every weekend series of columns. There's 12 of them.
You need to change that too. I have.
Well, you're helping me, honey. I don't do anything without you. No, we're partners. And yeah, you've been busier than I have. You've had so many responsibilities this summer. I'm putting my name on them, but you really help. And the whole point of this thing, of this whole series, is to try to help us, I'm talking about you and I, as well as those who read this column, to try to be a little more accurate and a little more realistic in terms of our expectations, both of our family and of our church. Because if we try for perfection and measure ourselves against social media and other things in our families, we're always going to be depressed. But, and it's the same with the church. If we expect the church and everyone in it, and our bishop and our leaders and our friends and everyone else to be perfect, we're always going to have a problem. So we're trying to do this series to essentially say, you know, here's what the church is. It's scaffolding. It helps us build our families. It helps us become better people. And it's from Jesus. So it is perfect in that sense. But in the sense of those who run it and those who administer it, we're all human. And we've got to cut ourselves a little slack. And the same in our family, that we're the same but a little different, because the family is not the scaffolding. We believe the family is the thing that's eternal. It's the thing we're building. It's what we want to last forever. The church is our helper here in this world as we move forward. So anyway, those of you who read or as it says online, LatterdaySaintMag.com, every weekend this summer, you've seen one of these articles, and there's a new one this week. And I think it's a particularly interesting one because, well, some of the earlier ones were kind of theoretical and theological, trying to explain how the gospel and how the church looks through this family-centric lens. The one today is really practical, and it's about sort of three-generation families, grandparents, parents, and kids, and how they can work more effectively together. And we want to share a little of this with you, some of the highlights, and then we'll tell you how to read the whole thing if what we say interests you. So listen to this.
The questions implied and considered in this essay are important socially and economically, societally, but they are most important personally and spiritually for each one of us. Here are some of these questions. Okay, here we go. In what important way does the American definition of family differ from the world's definition? Think about that.
We're going to get into that.
Were the 50s the good old days of families? Even in the face of statistics that show family decline, why are the best families and marriages in history existing now? What trends and demographics suggest that grandparents need to be more proactive today? How inclusive is a three-generation family? And is anyone single or married left out of that larger family definition? And on a practical level, how can parents and grandparents team up to make the present and the future life better for kids?
So those are the questions that we've been struggling with, thinking about, trying to write about. And if those questions are personal and individual, here's a broader societal question. If we recognize families as the basic unit of society, how do we improve and strengthen them? Today, in today's world, how do we make families stronger across the board? More government programs and assistance? Turn back the clock and have families function the way they did in the 50s? I don't think so. Maybe the simplest and most gospel-centered solution is surprisingly simple. Get grandparents more involved. Maybe the biggest resource of family is the grandparents, who in most cases, or in our experience, so many cases, the grandparents are not as involved as they could be with the kids. And in some cases, they're too involved. And how do we get that balance? So what we want to do to start off today is read you four little hypothetical letters. And we want you to contrast these, because the first two little notes, little letters, are from a nuclear family. In other words, a family that really just thinks of themselves as the parents and the kids. That's the family, just two generations living together as a family. And then we're going to read you a couple of letters from a three-generation family where there's really connection and interaction between the parents and the grandparents and sharing the raising of the kids. So Linda's going to play the role now. She's a nuclear mom. She is a mom in a family. It's just the parents and the kids. Grandparents very, very uninvolved with the kids.
Okay. So here I am, the nuclear mom. I feel like both marriage and parenting are harder today than they have ever been before. My parents tell me that it's always been hard, and good luck, it's your turn now, which is part of their hands-off, we raised you, now you raise them philosophy. My husband and I are wondering if we would have our third child. Two is hard enough, but three is straining everything, including our marriage, our budget, and our sanity. We both work, and we still can't afford the full-time childcare that we really need. And the worst part is that I've always feel pulled between the constant needs of my work and the constant needs of my kids. I feel guilty that caregivers and teachers have more time with my kids than I do. I say they are my biggest joy and responsibility, but I'm delegating the parenting job to others so I can do my job. But there is only one of me. What else can I do?
Now, here's the grandpa in that family, in that nuclear family. So this is a grandpa who is not particularly involved. And here's his little note. Hey, it's everything we had hoped for. It's a senior retirement community where we live, and we have all the leisure and recreation you could ever want, and none of the home or yard or kid responsibility that used to tie us down. But how many days a week can you play golf? And why is life so boring without the constant pressure that we actually worked so hard to get away from? If I'm honest, the thing that really bothers me and worries me is, I'll just say it, irrelevance. If I disappeared tomorrow, who would miss me? Maybe my golf buddies would need to find someone to replace me in the foursome. Same with my bridge club. We do see the kids and grandkids every Christmas and in the summer, but it's like getting to know them all over again because they're changing so fast. I sometimes think our daughters would like us to connect a little more, but the travel's hard. They live far away, and it just isn't the same on Zoom or online. And I do try to give them parenting and marital advice whenever I email them. So what could I do more, really? Maybe it's just going to take a little more time to get used to not having all those family responsibilities.
That is really funny. I think we all identify with little bits of that as we go through. But we need to take a brief break. But coming up, we have the three-generation dad. the three-generation grandma.
Yeah, we're going to read you notes from this other family where they really are a three-generation family instead of a nuclear family. So stay with us and we'll get to those notes and you do a comparison. You see which kind of family you want to be. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. And before we lose continuity, we're going to go right on to the three-generation dad.
Now here, I'm the dad, not the grandpa. I'm the dad now in a really connected three-generation family. You know, as important as our communication with our kids is, I've come to think of the communication with our parents as equally important. And they're both so connected because the kids are always the prime subject when we're with our parents. And when we're talking to our kids, we're so often referencing or talking about the grandparents. My folks, the grandparents of our kids, take my wife, Jenny, and I out to dinner every few months. We have what we call a five-facet review where we talk about one at a time each of the kids, each of our kids, about how each is doing physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, and spiritually. There's the five facets. My parents ask a lot of good questions, and Jenny and I end up learning a lot about ourselves from how we respond. Mom and Dad take notes, and they always ask what we would like them to do to help. Mainly with our four kids together, with our four heads together, that's Jenny and I and my two parents. When we really get together and brainstorm and put our heads together, we learn a lot about each of our own kids. I think my parents come away from these dinners knowing a lot more about each one of them, and it makes us know how much they love them, and we feel a little less hesitant to ask for their help and plan more grandparents' time for them. We call it Gen 1 and Gen 3 time, and it seems to be good for everyone. When they're tending the kids, we don't feel the same anxiety or guilt that we sometimes feel when we're putting them with caregivers or sitters that we barely know. So it really works. They're really proactive grandparents, my parents are. But they always ask for permission or agreement when they want to take them somewhere or when they want to teach them something. And I think that's why we have a kind of a synergy between all three generations. It makes life more manageable, and I think it's more fulfilling for all of us.
Okay, so here comes the three-generation grandma. Not too long after we had our first grandchild, it dawned on me that while our parenting span for each of our kids was only about 18 years until they left home, our parenting span,
grandparenting
span, could be 30 or even 40 years. I might spend half my life as a grandma. I also started realizing that about that same time, how much our girls and our son need help with their kids. I decided I wanted to be an involved, proactive grandma, but not a pushy or takeover one. I worked at communicating with our kids, especially our daughters and daughters-in-law, that I wanted to support them, that I knew that the stewardship of their kids was theirs, and God's guidance would come to them, not to me, regarding their kids. I wanted to be the one who asked the questions, not the one with all the answers. So we have a one and two generation meeting every once in a while where the parents catch us up, my husband and I up, on any challenges that they're facing at any time that we can discuss, that we might be able to help or not. And not is, that's important sometimes. Sometimes it's clear that they want us to stay out of certain things. It's not perfect, but sometimes I know I step on toes and lots of times I'm not available when they want me to help. And they respect that I have my own life and I can't always be there at their beck and call. But by and large, we feel so much more connected. And I'm so grateful because I honestly believe it makes it better for kids, for parents, and for us far from perfect, but always trying grandparents.
So I hope you followed that. I mean, that's to us, and these are hypothetical stories, but they reflect a lot of what we've seen as we've talked to grandparents around the world and parents. And there is a real substantive difference between a family that thinks of itself as a nuclear family. We're just the parents and the kids. Yeah, we got grandparents, but they live far away or they're living their own life. And, you know, we see them once in a while, but there's not really kind of this vibrant connection between them and our own kids. And when you compare that with the three-generation family, where they're really, you know, doing things together and really working together, it makes a really big difference. Over the 40 years that we've spent traveling the globe, speaking to audiences, mainly parents who've read our books, we've realized something that we hinted at the start of this article. It's a little bit shocking. In a couple of key aspects, American families are generally out of step with the majority of families in the world, and it is to our detriment.
Now, this may pique your interest because you're thinking, wait, we're looking at the Olympics. The Americans all look so happy. And those Chinese kids don't smile very often. But it is really true that there is something that we're doing that is different than other cultures. There's an American definition of family and a world definition of family. In this country, family usually means the nuclear family of just parents and children living together. In most of Asia and Africa, and across swaths of Europe and South America, family rarely means just the nuclear family and almost always means three or sometimes four generations living together with various and interesting interplay between each generation, and often with Gen 1, the grandparents, having a lot of responsibility and daily connection with Gen 3.
Boy, we've seen so much of that. And frankly, I mean, it's hard sometimes to live three generations under one roof, but in most of the world, that's how families live. And there are pretty amazing advantages. There are economic advantages to the world definition of family, three generations. But I think the biggest pluses are the teaching and responsibility sharing synergies. Grandparents really can teach some things better to kids than the parents can. And the two reinforcing each other is more powerful in children's lives than almost anything you can think of. And a lot of the parent-kid power struggles end up getting eliminated when the grandparents are doing some of the teaching.
So I don't think that you're advocating that we move in together under one roof, but we are advocating for my family and yours that there be more three-generational connections and communication, that Gen 1 and 2 spend more time and effort communicating and brainstorming and cooperating on Gen 3.
In families where this happens, where parents partner equally with each other as family managers, parents and grandparents, bringing in the grandparents as proactive, participating family consultants, I think we believe, honey, that the best and strongest families in the world result.
But wait a minute. I don't know whether equally is the right word right there, because we can't partner equally. I mean, they do have the responsibility of the kids. Ours is not equal to that.
No, I'm saying when the parents partner equally with each other and then bring the grandparents in to help out. So the parents in charge, that the grandparents willing and able and involved and up to speed on the kids so they really can help out.
Okay.
Right?
All right. But let's not convert back to the stereotype families of the 50s or convert over to the three or four generation families all under one roof of Asia and Africa. Instead, we really need to build cooperation, connection, synergistic three-generation families that that today's connection and technology allow, and that can be the strongest and most lasting families ever known. And that is true. We've got so many connections now that we our parents didn't have.
I mean, absolutely. We can, it doesn't, and distance isn't a factor. If you're listening today and you're a grandparent and you're like, well, my kids live in California and I live in Georgia, doesn't really matter because you can Zoom in with them anytime you want. You can be as involved as you want to be. The question is doing it delicately and doing it so that your kids, the parents, don't feel like you're telling them what to do or taking over or being so proactive that you're stepping on their toes. And that's where we're only going to make two recommendations. And the article, if you want to read this further, we'll tell you at the end of the show how to find it really fast. But just two things. Number one, we call it the five-facet review, and you heard it in those little vignettes. Getting together for dinner, not the kids, just generations one and two, the parents and the grandparents, spending an evening, a pleasant evening, parents taking the lead, five-facet review on each of the kids. How is this child doing physically? How's he doing mentally?
Well, you said it right when you said parents take the lead because, well, sometimes we have initiated, do you have some time so we could talk about your kids.
Yeah, grandparents feel like initiate it, but parents are in charge.
Yeah, and it just is such a fine line because you don't want to feel like you're stepping on parents' toes or that you want to be more involved than they want you to be, but that it's a cooperative thing. Like, I love your kids so much. I want to know more about them. And can we get together and so that we can be better helpers or, you know, be sure that attitude comes across rather than, we have had a lot of experience. We're going to tell you how to get out of this mess, you know.
Now, if that kind of five-facet review, this sort of open, non-judgmental discussion between parents and grandparents, if that seems unrealistic to you, if maybe things aren't as great between you as you'd like them to be, and it would seem awkward to do that, try to work into it gradually, even gingerly. If you're the grandparent, start out by just complimenting your kids on how they're raising your children. Find the good things. You may have criticisms, but don't mention them. Find the good things and get together and gradually work into this. And if you're the parent, say to the grandparents, hey, let's go to dinner sometime. Maybe you can pick up the bill and you can, you know, we can work on this five-facet review. And then the article ends, and we're not going to have time to get into it, but this whole team approach to grandparenting.
Well, we can go into this more next week because there's a lot involved.
We think parents should be the trunk that connects the ancestors, the ear that really listens, the assembler that pulls together people for family reunions, and the match that helps financially. To read more of that, just go to Meridian Magazine this week. It's the cover story. And we think you'll really enjoy it.
There's a lot of meat in there and a lot of years of practice and wrong moves and, you know, trying to figure it out ourselves. And everybody's families are different. Maybe some of you feel like, oh, I could just never do that. I mean, my son-in-law is just hates me and I can't do that. I mean, really, you'll have to just make this work according to what works for you. We're just kind of throwing out some ideas today that have really been helpful for us.
So thanks. Excuse me. Thanks for being with us. My voice ran out right as the half hour was over. We love all of you, even though we can't see you. And good luck in your families and in your relationships, the most important thing there is.
And whether you're a parent or a grandparent, there's a lot to do to make a happy life. So we wish you the very best, and we'll see you next time on Ours on the Road.